is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin from 2008.
And we are coming to you from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Kick, Instagram, maybe your Twitch. I forgot Twitch. Maybe you're listening to us later wherever you get podcasts. And if so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do at patreon.com/comicbookclub, as well as a bunch of other fun bonuses. And folks, we have a great show for you this evening. Great show. Justin has a haircut. We don't want to spend too much time because Pete is off this week. I want to save it for him when he's back.
I've never done anything where there's more commentary around a slight change. Like, even in an office job, someone's like, oh, nice haircut. End of conversation. We talk about it for one. It becomes the topic of the podcast and many more.
Well, we've been kind of the same for 20 years at this point. So any sort of major change, like a haircut, for example, or
major clothes, life change, a new hat.
Things
headline.
Like that.
Yeah, new hat, obviously. I got a new hat. Look at this. Shrimp.
Shrimp hat. You love shrimp.
I just had it for dinner.
Whoa. There we go. Now you're wearing the hat. That's amazing. Did you feel at any point when you're wearing the hat, you're like, it's like wearing the t-shirt to the concert, the band's t-shirt to the concert?
Yeah, my dinner alone over the sink.
Yeah,
as a single parent, I was like, it's like I'm at the concert. I felt really, really cool, really hot.
Well, I'll tell you who is really cool.
Wait, before you get to that, there's someone in the comments named Pete LePage 9325 who's somehow been able to weigh in on the haircut.
Oh, boy. So Pete's not here on the show, but he is still roasting us.
The man's consistent. You got to give him that.
You got to give him that. And we also got to give it to our great guest this evening. He is the writer behind DC's new take on Lobo, among many, many other great things. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show, Scotty Young. Scotty, hello.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Little mic.
I'm going to use my influencer mic. It's just my AirPods case. I also have noticed that. I'm like, that's a thing now. This is a thing.
Yeah. You gotta hold it right up to your mouth.
It's a weird thing.
I approve of the haircut and the hat, both.
Thank you, Scotty.
I have so many options ahead of me.
I've known you guys for a long time. I've seen all the versions, and I was like, look at this motherfucker still looking 12 years old. I don't like it.
Shave your beard live on this podcast. Oh,
sir.
Let's get under the hood.
There'll be four chins under here. You have no idea. When you let it grow this long, you don't know what's going to be under there. I did it one time about 10 years ago. I was like, let's do a reboot. I looked like I needed to go door to door and let you know I moved to the neighborhood. Like, that's what it
looks
like.
And it's a bummer because you're like, well, this is who I am for at least 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not like these motherfuckers that can just like poof, like chia pet the next day. No, this has been probably 2 decades in the making. slowly growing, you know?
So you're gripping those little hairs. You're holding tight to them.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it looks great. Love the beard. That's basically all we wanted to talk about. So we're good. Have a great night, Scotty. Thank you so much.
You guys go. I'm going to go make some shrimp.
Yeah. Actually, what we're going to talk about is Lobo. As I mentioned, Lobo 1 is out now as part of Next Level. Jorge Corona, your frequent collaborator, is on the art. I'll just mention in advance, Lobo number 2 is coming out April 15th, just in time for tax day. I hear you can actually get a good refund on buying it, so everybody definitely pick it up. First issue, we picked it up. We loved it. It's ridiculous. It's profane. It's exactly what you'd expect from a Lobo book. I know this has been a long time dream of yours to do it. And that's kind of the whole idea of Next Level for anybody who doesn't know, is like letting creators essentially shoot their shot on characters that may have worked at some point or may not have worked, but it's their passion project. So what is it about Lobo in particular? I mean, I could make some guesses, but like, what is it about Lobo that draws you to him, Scotty?
For me, Lobo was just, I was a big Mad Magazine kid. I was from a very, very small town in the middle of Illinois, in the middle of a cornfield, in the 80s and early 90s. And I didn't have access to a lot, you know, I didn't know what comic books were outside of Archie and Mad Magazine. So I just grew up reading Mad Magazine. That's what taught me how to draw. That and the Sunday strips, you know? the newspaper strips. So when I got older and started getting into comic books and started to love this art form, when I discovered Lobo, it really felt the same to me. It felt like, oh, this is kind of the Mad Magazine of comic books to me, like, mm-hmm. you know, of the superhero genre. Cause it felt like it was what I loved about Mad Magazine. It makes fun of everything. Nothing's off limits.
Yeah.
It makes fun of all the things we love. They love it.
Right.
You know, it's like when you have a best friend, you can fuck with each other because you love each other so much. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's best true. Kind. That's the, on the crest of our podcast.
Yeah. So that's to me, Lobo felt like that. It always felt like it was giving a good like satire and parody run at comic books themselves. I mean, Lobo himself is kind of a parody look at Wolverine and Punisher and all those gritty 90 characters. So it felt very Mad Magazine to me. And then also, you know, it took a run at social satire as well, you know, and poking fun at corporations and just society at large. So it just, the humor that I think Giffen's hilarious. All of that always spoke to me. So it was always, he was always my favorite DC character, just because of the humor level. So he was always right there on the top of my list. Anytime anybody was like, oh, what would you do at DC? I mean, it's easy to say Batman, but I was always like, I think I could take a good run at Lobo.
Well, and I feel like Lobo has been there was like sort of the reboot of Lobo a couple years back, and now it's a character we haven't really seen center stage a lot. And I feel like you were like, I'm going to show you my Lobo and propel him forward. Is that sort of the take?
I think so. I mean, I honestly think that what we did was just reach way, 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 way back and grab that old Lobo. And throw him. I think there was the original Lobo, and then I think there's the, you know, at some point, sometimes with these funny characters, they can, you know, if they're given to people who aren't like super passionate about it or whatever, they can become a caricature of themselves,
right?
You know, just like any, like if you have a favorite, you know, sitcom or whatever, at some point you're like, what happened? Where did this? It still looks like it. The same people are here, but the writing becomes a little different or whatever. And so I think Lobo is one of those characters. I think Deadpool can be one of those characters.
Yes.
Anytime you have a humor character, it can easily slip into a caricature of itself. And what we had hoped to do was go back and harness that original feeling that Giffen, Grant, and Bisley did back in the early 90s and just, you know, I don't want to say just do that, but because it's still us and it's still our voice and we're still dealing with the world that we live in. Clearly from issue one, we're taking a little bit of a run at current things, and they held me back from some of that stuff. I couldn't say as much as I probably wanted. But.
Show us those early scripts maybe.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, some of the names that I had the name I had for the company was so on the nose that they were like, DC Legal was like, probably can't call it that.
DC Legal was like, hey, I think we're going to be in touch a lot over the next couple of months and years.
Oh, yeah. So. They're like, oh, you're going to make us do our fucking job. Everybody, usually DC Legal's just like kicking their feet up like, Batman's fine. He's saying, grr, I'm Batman. That's, you know, then we come in and we're like, oh, did he just call the company that owns us? Cool. That's great. No, that's going to do that.
Well, I'm curious about the caricature part, actually, because there is a lot of ridiculous stuff that happens in the first issue. But knowing you as a writer, you definitely try to put a soul under all the comedy at the same time. So how do you make sure that hits the right balance? How do you make sure that you're giving Lobo something emotionally to do over the course of your story while you're still hitting all the comedy at the same time?
You know what? The interesting part of that is, I mean, this is just me being as honest as I could be. We're still figuring that out, mm-hmm. right? Mm. Because I think Lobo is such an interesting character that people love him for a certain reason. And so coming out of the gate, we want to serve that. And I'm one of those weird, sometimes I even hate saying this because it sounds so fucking foo-foo, like, oh, the character tells me who he is, whatever, right? But it's not altogether untrue. Sometimes figuring out what your take on a book or a character doesn't really reveal itself till you're in it. And so Jorge and I kind of were like, hey, let's just start running and see what we do together with this. We were always going to approach it. Let's do some like single issue, two issue stories here at first. And like, let's get familiar with the character and see what happens with them. Because Jorge and I have, like you guys said, we've made over 1,000 comic book pages together. So our language with each other is almost just, you know, mental at this point. We can telekinetic almost. We can decide we can know what each other's going to do. So, you know, like this first issue, for example, like I just wrote TV executive. Like that's what I wrote for the TV executive guy. What Jorge gave me back informs almost how I wrote the entire second issue, because all of a sudden that guy has a huge dome head full of TV screens. I didn't know that was going to be it, but now, now I'm writing something I couldn't have written had I not seen that, you know, mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it. So, we definitely, Jorge actually was like, when he first started drawing it, he's like, I actually don't know. It's going to take me a minute to get used to this kind of book with you, because usually all we do is books that try to make people cry. Like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that, because most of your stuff is very serious. So what has that changed in the language of the relationship? I mean, I know you're getting towards that anyway, but.
Yeah, I think with Jorge and I, it's just a different muscle he has to scratch, because he's so used to reading my scripts where it's like eventually each time it's such an emotional button. We've got Middle West, which is our sad dad book. We've got the Me You Love in the Dark, which is the sad girlfriend book. And then, Ain't No Grave, which is the sad mom book. Like everything's like a sad relationship sort of book. And this one, he's like, we're just making people laugh. And I was like, I think so. Like in gore, like gross them out a little bit. And then Jorge, I didn't realize this until this book, but he loves drawing butts. It seems like anytime he can have a butt really close to the camera, he takes that advantage of that. We really wanted to approach it right away. I don't know if you guys, I'm a big Justified fan, the show Justified.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that first season is so different from the rest of the show, but I think it's also super important because the first season does a lot of heavy lifting on just letting you know who Raylan is as a character by doing these one-off episodes, and doesn't really get going on a big epic world that he's a part of until season two, which I think season two of Justified is one of the best seasons of television maybe ever. Like, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I literally used that when I was talking to the editors, was like, we're going to kind of justify season one this and just give you Lobo, day in the life of Lobo. And as we are doing that, we're already starting to be like, ooh, this might be. But we also I don't think there's probably like Lobo's the one character that like we want to make sure we don't do the typical stuff, which like, oh, here comes his girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
He's got a heart. Here comes his kid. Well, Giffen already wrapped that up for us. He had infanticides, one of my favorite arcs of all time, which is 1,000 Lobo kids trying to kill him. So that we can't use that as his heart.
That's because I was thinking like the Lobo backstory or the Lobo expanded universe. Like it's not, it feels like it always gets zeroed out. So then where does that put you at for the Justified version of this?
That's what, you know, we're figuring that out. That's the beauty of this. And that's why I love
it. Oh, right now you're still in the experimental phase.
Oh yeah, we're still just running. Like we're still just
that's awesome.
That's what I love about it. They literally at one point asked, like, can you give us the overall plan for your X amount of issues? And I was like, nah. Like I just said, no, because I don't think that's what Lobo is. Like I think you could do that with the Batman. I think you could do that with Deathstroke. I think you could do that with these other characters that need this architecture to be able to get you to these places. I think when you start to try to do that with a character like Lobo or an ongoing series like Lobo, I think that's what starts to make it not work. Like,
right.
Because you get stuck. Like, we were at the DC Summit, and this is what I said. I was like, Lobo is fast and loose. That way, like, if one of your books pops something off, we can grab onto it next month. We don't have to be like, ooh, we're in the middle of a 12-issue story. We'll get to it in 2027, right? Like, I think Lobo is something like, if something pops off in the real world, like, let's say a TV network getting bought up by somebody else. Like, we could deal with it next month because we're not locked into anything. And that, to me, is one. There's so few titles in comic books in general because we fall in love with the 6-issue arc and the trade, right? Yeah. The trade, and which I love, by the way. I read all those books. I just think that Lobo is a character in a book that feels like it needs to be treated very different than that, you know?
It feels like you, Jorge, and Lobo are an improv group, and you're building out as you go, the three of you.
That's probably the best. I'm going to steal that from now on because I don't know that I've been able to figure out how to say that, but that's exactly what it is. I mean, like I said, seeing what Jorge does gives me new ideas. Then I bounce off that. Then he comes in. And then weird things like, you know, Jorge just was a part of a project on Kickstarter. SWATcast or whatever, is it like, it's like one of the biggest comic book Kickstarter of all time, I think. It's like almost $1 million. And he's drawing that. So he needed like a quick little break. And we already had a story in the pipeline for that. It's solicited. So this is not a spoiler, but Lobo needed to get his bounty hunter license renewed. So he needed to do like a psyche eval. And so we're like, because Jorge drew, if you guys saw issue one, you saw how cool he draws Kid Lobo. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, that's the best. So like, I was like, let's just do a Kid Lobo story right away. Let's get in, right? So issue three, he's going to be like, you know, he has like he gets triggered and has a memory of his childhood. But it turns out that Jorge needed that issue to go over and take a break. So we needed to get a fill-in, kind of. So I was like, ooh, what if you do the bookends? Uh-huh. Like the bookend story where he's talking to the therapist. And then we'll find somebody who does the middle story, the kid's story. And her name's Nicoletta Baldari. And it looks like a Disney cartoon. It is.
No, that's awesome.
It couldn't be more fitting. But that we backed into that. Like, that was not a plan. It was just like, it's again, like you said, improv. You're like, oh, do you need a break? Okay, let's try to, this is a good issue for us to do it on because it's, you can do this, you can do 3 pages up front, 2 pages in the back, and then we'll find somebody that fit. And then who we like landed on because of just literally, she ended up in my DMs and I was like, holy shit. It's totally what you said. It's like fully improv. And now it looks like we're fucking geniuses. Like we.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, this behind the scenes. That's what improv is, too.
Yeah, exactly.
You look good only at the end.
Only at the end. You're like, you guys fucking wrote that. And you're like, well, we sure did. Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah. I do want to mention before I forget that every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans. His name is Brett Macris. He runs an amazing restaurant there called Shift that everybody should check out when they're down there. But he either creates or curates a cocktail for us. And this week he made the Main Man Highball in honor of Lobo and in honor of you, Scotty. There's 2 ounces of whiskey. Any whiskey could be bourbon too. To top, ginger ale and one each, a lime wedge. And it's nice and simple and straightforward. It's going to knock you on your ass just like Lobo, I think. So there you go. The Main Man.
That's awesome. You guys sent this to me earlier and I totally was like, maybe I'll make one, but I had to go pick up. This is the most non-Lobo, like anti-Lobo thing ever. Like, I had to go pick up my sheep-a-doodle from doggy daycare.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Lobo would do that, but then everybody would be dead somehow by the end. So it kind of fits. Yeah. But yeah, there you go. That is the Main Man Highball. So
there's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5 where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
I know every story is different, but you have a very long-running series called I Hate Fairyland, which is about a character who is extremely violent, is near immortal, and recovers from almost anything, and gets in comedy situations.
Yeah.
So how do you make sure they're two distinct entities?
Well, Alex, thank you for telling everybody I'm a one-trick pony.
Exactly. That's what a loaded question.
I appreciate that, you fucker. No. Here's the thing, and I've said this before, when I was developing I Hate Fairyland, which the original name on my computer folder, which it still is Fuck Fairyland. It was never I Hate. Mm-hmm. I only changed that because I was like, I probably should change it.
A frustrating but correct choice you made.
Yeah. Do you ever talk to Kyle Starks about that, by the way? Because he has Fuck This Place and he had to change it to I Hate This Place as well. So I feel like you have a lot in common.
I think they reached out to me at some point about that, like asking. I was like, oh, well, I went to Kirkman and Stevenson and was like, they both at first, they did not make me change it. They were fine with me calling it Fuck Fairyland. But I was like, I'm also a decent businessman. So I was like, am I making a big mistake? And they were like, probably.
Yeah.
and we didn't realize until we announced it at the Image Expo. And we had the big reception after that, the announcement, where a lot of retailers came up to us like, hey, can our store do the Fuck Fairyland cover? And what we realized was like, oh, we'll call it I Hate Fairyland, but every issue we can do two covers. And that's what I've done for 50 issues. So I've got to double dip on it the whole time. But when I was first developing that, Gert was a big, hulking, oversized dude, not dissimilar to Lobo. But he basically was Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes, but Lobo size. Like, that was awesome. My original take on I Hate Fairyland. And as I was starting to like get into it and like write the actual stories, I actually hit up Jonathan Hickman one night, called him, and I was like, is it funny? I said, which one's funnier? And I gave him three options. I was like, big hulking dude, like older woman, or young girl. Like, because what I was realizing was the big hulking guy, after a couple gags, just seemed so violent. Like, seeing like Lobo just constantly kill cute things is like funny for a couple time, but then it's just like there's something, then it just seems like this is aggressive. Like, this is so aggressive. Yeah. And eventually, you know, after talking to Hickman and a few other people, I realized like the little girl is probably the best version. But I've said over and over, I was like, I've been writing Lobo for a long time. It's just, he's just had, green lock, big curly deals. Locks.
Not to continue down the I Hate Fairyland road, but I think it's this month they're doing I Hate Fairyland variant covers on pretty much every Image comics book. What is that like? Seeing That's something great. That you're like, I created this little title. Obviously, it's grown on its own, but now it's taken over all of Image comics.
It is super rad, man. Like, it was a book I was terrified when I was launching it because I thought, kind of the same way I felt when I was launching the Oz books at Marvel. I was like, this is superhero world. Like, nobody's going to buy this kid book. Like, I felt like Marvel was maybe trying to get rid of me. Like, they were like, you know, like, come do Oz. I was like, Oz? Like, but, you know, ended up doing great. And then Fairyland, again, I had a couple projects. Hickman and I were going to do a project together. And I give him a lot of credit because he was like, listen, dude, I will fucking write a book for you. That's great. But it's like, you really don't need me. You should just go do your thing. And of all the ideas I had, I Hate Fairyland, I felt, was the least commercial. But at one point I heard Joe Casey on an interview. He was like, if you go to Image and do a book, you should do a book that the other two companies won't let you do. Like,
right.
And I was like, I Hate Fairyland was my one idea that was like, no one will publish this, like, this book. So the fact that like 10 years later, I'm getting ready to hit issue 50. And for half that run, I just have been writing it. And I, like, it's employed other people. Like,
yeah.
The fact that other artists like earn their living off a character that I, a book that I created, blows my mind. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's exactly like the X-Men, but it is. I mean, I'm pretty much the X-Men. So that is really, really cool. It's really great to see how many other comics, because where you guys, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but when those initiatives come out, like, Image doesn't make you do it. Like, you opt in.
Right.
You know, they come to you and they say, hey, this is happening. If you want to get your book in, you can, you don't have to. I I've opted in on some, haven't opted in on others. So to see how many people were excited to opt in, super exciting. And again, just the fact that I'm getting ready to hit issue 50, which is why they're doing it these next couple of months, is to kind of help celebrate kind of this big benchmark for the title. So it's unbelievable, because I feel like I did not feel like I was ever going to be this person in comics. I always thought I was going to be on the outside, like trying to scrap my way into the middle. So it's pretty wild.
I'm really struck by it. I mean, we always talk about comics being a collaborative medium, and that often means like the writer and artist have to work together. But hearing you talk about it, it feels like you're collaborating always, every minute. You're talking to people on the phone, you're working it out. And that is actually, the more collaborative it is, the better, the further you go. Or they're like,
oh yeah, you could not have said it better. And I think I've actually been talking about this a lot recently, about how important true collaboration is, because a lot of times it doesn't happen. Like the first half of my career, when I was just drawing and didn't have the status to kind of throw weight around a little, you know, I would just be given scripts. And a lot of times I was like, I probably would never read this book. Right. Like,
right.
You know, they were varying degrees of meh or whatever.
Right.
But I had to draw them. That's my job. This is how I'm going to pay my bills. And when I started to, you know, then I was writing and drawing myself. And then as soon as I started writing for other people, it didn't even make sense to me not to talk to them, but not to make a book specifically for them. Like,
right,
with,
yeah.
You know, so like, I just got, again, I keep bringing up the DC summit that we just got done with, but I actually talked about this in the room, how important it was to, one tip I gave all the younger writers in there was, whoever you work with, if you don't know them, the first thing you should do is go out and buy a stack of books that they've done, if they have a catalog. And I'm not saying that you have to read all those books, but you should pay, you should literally flip through, like, get four trades and flip through those things. And after a little while, you should absorb what angles they like to draw in, how they, what, you know, are they mid shot people? Are they zoom out? You'll start to see exactly what they, how they approach a page, how they approach story. You'll also start to see where you might be able to push them a little bit. And then you also need to be like Jorge and I mean, we're almost family at this point, so it's unfair. It's a little bit, it's probably different than I can advise other people, but because we're almost like a Brubaker Phillips situation now, where we're so close as friends and family, that making comic books is almost like just like this is what we do. But like every book that, like, Lobo was just like every other book we did. We start off by me starting a Spotify playlist of the tone music that fits. So Lobo is just like nothing but fucking stoner rock and metal.
When does that get released to the general?
You could go to my Substack. I did a newsletter a couple of weeks ago where I put up a link. Everybody can check out the so a lot of Clutch, a lot of, you know, Monster Magnet, a lot of cool stuff there. We do that, and then we talk all the time. Like, we just start listing stuff that we want to accomplish. Like, is there any guest stars that you wanted, that he wants to draw? What kind of funny things? We just write sentences, and I put them on an index card on my program, and we just list it out. So I think collaboration is, like, truly collaboration makes the best books, because he's going to be the best him if he's excited to go to it. I mean, sure, he'll do what I write, but it's way better if he's like excited to do it, or she or whoever, right? So yeah, I think it's super important to be talking all the time, which doesn't happen as much as you think it would.
Well, that's why I feel like everyone pays lip service to that, but I feel like hearing you talk about it's a belief, and it's just in your blood to like.
Oh yeah, like. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even be on Lobo if Jorge wouldn't have said yes. I would have just passed on the job. Like, I also don't do books. I don't think I've ever written a book so far that I didn't walk in with my collaborator. Like, where we decided to do it together. Where, you know, I don't think I've ever been given, here's your artist, because I don't know how to do that actually. Like, I think. You know, like, I feel like it's like you wouldn't join a band where there was like, here's your band, go.
Yeah.
Like that's, I'm a big music guy too. So I feel like you're getting ready to like spend a lot of time, and you're asking, like, as a writer, you're asking an artist to spend all their time, like doing what you build. And I think that it's super important that everybody has skin in that game. It can't just be like, I'm somebody's boss. That's the worst.
Do you think that comes from you starting as an artist, like coming from that direction?
I think, yeah, I think it's probably a big chunk of me coming, starting as an artist, and also being like I said, like such a big music head. Like before I honestly didn't ever think I would be in comics. I 100% thought I was going to just be in hip hop and be a rapper. Like that's all I did my teenage years. That's all I did. Like, I didn't know how to get a comic book job, but I definitely knew how to make music and sell it.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So I think that to me, which, you know, is cool with the Lobo stuff, like the auteur nature of things, which is sit in a room with people you dig and make shit. That's always been my favorite thing to do. And so, yeah, I do. But I do think though, all those years as an artist and watching how artists are treated was always weird to me. Like when it was, you know, it was always treated like a writer's book and we just kind of got a job. And I was like, you understand, we spend all the fucking time on this. Like,
yeah,
listen, I know the secrets now. I've written a script in a day before. Like, I understand. it's not samesies. It's definitely not samesies. Yeah.
Oh man. A lot of people want that to be kept secret.
No, I know.
Like, wait, I don't know if Justin's going to ask this, but I got to ask this now. Is your music still up somewhere? And if we unearth it, will you get canceled?
Wow. Or you just kill us.
Yeah. Well, luckily I'm too old for there to have been a place to put music up on. Okay. Like, I mean,
good.
I'm cassette tape old. Like,
okay.
That's like, I barely made it into CD burning age before I got a comic book job. The internet was just starting. So yeah, we always talk about maybe putting some stuff out there, 'cause I still have like the cassette tapes and mixtapes, but
that's so funny.
At some point we'll get it out there for sure.
I'll check Napster. Pete, our third host who's not here, is constantly calling Lobo Space Wolverine. Could you like just sort of really tell him why that's wrong and like, what's up with that? I think it's fucked up.
Or is it right? I don't know. Is he Space Wolverine? Yeah. This is Pete's assertion, not ours.
It's Pete. Well,
it's not. I guess he's not wildly off base. I mean, I guess he. I mean, Lobo means gray wolf, right? Like it is, it's clearly clearly taking a shot at Wolverine. So I don't know if he is Space Wolverine as much as he is like Space beat the shit out of Wolverine, right? Like somewhere in that zone.
It's a roast.
Like, or he's like Space Fuck Wolverine. You know, that's
Well, we got a new nickname on the podcast, that's for sure.
There is a character that Lobo is crossing over with pretty famously on screen, who is Supergirl. They just put out a new trailer today. We got to see a look of Jason Momoa as Lobo. Now, this is maybe me being kind of dumb, but reading the June solicits, it looks like maybe there's sort of a crossover, or Supergirl is in Lobo that month and Lobo is in Supergirl that month. What can you tell us about that?
There's a cover out, right? In the solicits?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Supergirl's going to be in there. I mean, awesome. I don't. Yeah, I mean, she's on the cover pretty big. So I was like, I don't know what I could say, but also I don't give a fuck. Like, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think it takes a genius to realize like we're probably gonna put Supergirl in Lobo while the movie's out. So, right. That was also again. I think the fun thing about me writing Lobo is I'm a little bit more open to just talk. Like when Jorge said he needed a fill in at first, he wanted to take issue 4 off, and I was like, bro, you don't want to take off the Supergirl issue.
Yeah,
like,
right.
you want to draw the Supergirl issue, homie. So yeah, we're definitely gonna have some fun with Supergirl because I saw that new trailer that they released today, and man, I'm fucking pumped. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it looks so great. Fun. It's
I'm psyched too.
It just looks so fun. I think James Gunn, the direction that he's guiding these movies, it's right up my alley, man. Like, mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I think Momoa seems to genuinely be excited to play this character, which we don't ever really. I know that we have actors be like, I've always liked Spider-Man. That's what they said to say, you know. But this almost like I've seen Momoa be like, oh, I've been waiting for this. Like even when he got hired to play Aquaman, when they brought him in, he thought they were bringing him in to play Lobo.
Wow. He was like, he's probably been called Lobo for a good portion of his life. Yeah, I feel like he was never called Aquaman until they were like,
correct.
Congrats. Yeah.
Even after that, we were still like, nah, it's Lobo.
Yeah, Lobo. Right. Exactly. Just hold on. Give us another year.
Yeah.
We got a question here in the comments over on YouTube. This is from Spaceman Frank Adventures. Speaking of what I expect to be a very sad story, so excited for Boy at the End. Any chance we get an update on that project? Thanks for all the amazing work, Scotty Young.
Well, thank you, longest name handle of all time, Spaceman Frank Adventures. There's so many. Man, the Boy at the End is like my great white whale. Like it's like the project I've been chasing for a long time. And again, it's probably because it's one of the most kind of emotional things that I've been chipping away at. But really what I've been wanting to do was get Lobo launched and settled in, which has happened. And so even this week, I've been spending time again, like diving back into that project, which is the first project I'll write and draw. I mean, I've not done really interior pages in about 8 years, mm-hmm. which is really yeah. strange for me. So that's another thing. There's a little intimidation where it's like, fuck, man, do I remember how to do this?
Got the fastball still. Well, describe the project for the people that don't know.
So Boy at the End really started off very odd. And again, going back to what you were talking about earlier, Justin, about improv, I would get up and every day I'd get to the studio, you know, about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I always spent like the first hour doing a sketch. And usually it's, you know, of whatever I'm inspired to do. Wreck-It Ralph came out. Cool. I'll do Wreck-It Ralph, whatever. And then sometimes, you know, I'd be all up in my fucking feelings about something or whatever. And I didn't feel like drawing a pop culture character. And this kid, which started off as a bunny, weirdly enough, I did like a live painting thing in San Diego, and I drew somebody. We did a thing where like people threw out stuff. So me and Scott Morris, who used to work to Pixar for over 20 years, we did these paintings of an apocalypse bunny. It was like this little bunny apocalypse gas mask, and he had bunny ears. And so I drew that, and I was like, "Oh, this will be my next book. It'll be my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles." Right? Clearly, it was not, but. As I was sitting there, I whited out the bunny ears one day. I was looking at it, I was like, so I just took away the bunny ears. And then it just looked like a little kid, this little kid. And then I just started drawing this little kid walk in situations, almost like a, like similar to The Far Side, but like a sad version. Like not joke, but like, if, you know, if I had like a feeling or feeling a certain way, or a song inspired me or lyrics inspired me, I'd use this little kid as almost like a mouthpiece to, you know, explore this or examine this idea or thought. And so I've had dozens and dozens of drawings over the years of this little kid. And it's almost like something like a mix between Dr. Seuss, the Max, it looks post-apocalyptic, but it's really not. And I think when people get this, when they people finally read the story, eventually I was like, I probably should craft a story around this, which has become super problematic because that's not what it set out to be. So anyway, it, you could go to my Instagram or my newsletters or anything online and see versions of this. And my buddy Scott Mosier, who some of you guys might know from being producing all the Kevin Smith movies and directing The Grinch, he actually helped me over this past year. We actually also made like a little 2-minute short animation of him.
Oh, that's awesome.
That will show up. So anyway, that's my great white whale of a project. And my hope is 2027, some into 2026 or 2027, we'll see that come to light.
Yeah. Wow. This is another one for the comments. This is M Dubcat, alt reality story where Gert meets the unused hulking guy.
Oh my gosh. I think this person might be spying on me.
Yeah.
yes, there's a very good chance of that for sure. Like issue 50 is coming up. Issue 50 is coming up. And the idea I had to wrap up 50 and like where we're going, like, is super interesting. So yeah, I'm not going to say too much more past that, but that's not a bad foresight that person has.
Wow.
And this is Southside Ronan says, loved Lobo. You're the perfect voice to lead the main man into the next level. Will you be at C2E2 next year? LOL, need my copy signed.
I have no idea if I'll be at C2E2. Literally just ended about a day ago, I think.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. We don't have next year's conventions. It did come up today because we realized we haven't been there in about 3 years. So it's on our list. It's always tough because it always competes with Planet Comic Con here in Kansas City, which is where I live. So it's always hard to not do your hometown show, but it's not in the cards, but we'll let you know on the newsletter.
This is another one from Nat Townsend. I'm a fan of Scotty's Wizard of Oz adaptation. Would he be interested in adapting any other classics into comics?
Totally. I think in a really cool run at Alice in Wonderland would be amazing. Like that was one of the first books as a kid that I read and was like, wow, what the fuck is this? You know, it was so trippy. I think that would be amazing. I think that would probably be the one that I would imagine that I'd like to take a run at for sure.
Derek Maynard wants to know, any creator you'd like to work with that you haven't yet? I feel like you and DWJ might vibe.
That's really interesting. I think what's great about Daniel, and I've known him for a long time, and he's a Chicago guy, a brilliant artist, one of the nicest dudes out there. But what I also love about DWJ is he's heading, you know, he's kind of doing the same track that I got on, like where he was an artist doing stuff, but then he started writing and drawing his own stuff. You know, that I discovered him through his Space Mullet. Like before he was doing anything in comics, he just had his webcomic Space Mullet, which me and Jason, I'm going to give Jason Howard credit because Jason Howard found it. And we used to Skype every day while we worked. And he was like, man, check this fucking webcomic out. And it was brilliant.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Funny story. Again, before Daniel was doing anything in mainstream, was just getting some recognition on Space Mullet, he posted that he was going to C2E2 and he was doing commissions. And I will tell you right now, people will die, but they were not very expensive. Like definitely, you could definitely not get a Daniel Warren Johnson piece for how much Jason Howard and I paid back in the day. But the piece that I got, Lobo.
Really?
Literally got Daniel to draw Lobo. It was probably 15 years ago.
Like, where's that pick? Where's that pick?
Yeah, I need to go find that piece. I still have it, but it is 100%. I like just didn't know who he was. He did a webcomic.
That's wild.
And had him do Lobo. That was my sketch I got from Daniel. So, but as far as creators that I like to do stuff with, man, the list is crazy. Like, I'd love to write something for Riley Rossmo, which is a Daniel Warren Johnson connection. And I've known Riley for a long time. Spent the weekend, went out to dinner with Adam Kubert one of the nights. I've always talked with him, and he actually said, when are we going to do something? I was like, say the fucking word, dog. you fucking legend. Like, I'll write the fuck now. I'll leave this convention right now. Yeah,
right on a napkin.
Yeah. Got to spend some time with one of my literal heroes, Chris Pacello.
Yeah.
Brought him to my favorite spot here in Kansas City yesterday before he left town. He came to visit the studio. I definitely wasn't crying. You guys were crying. I wasn't crying.
That's so cool.
I would love to write something for him. So there's definitely a list for sure, but yeah.
I'm curious. This is just sort of jumping off of the convention thing, and maybe this is too wonky, but I do wonder about this a lot. There's a lot of worries economically in general in the world, but definitely in the comic book industry, people wonder about how do I get people eyeballs on my comics? How do I make money? How do I make sure that I'm set further in my career when I'm still freelance? So for you, who is at a certain level now, I see you, obviously you're going to conventions. I saw you at Terrificon. You had a big line there, but you were also very organized at the same time, which not everybody is. You also have a very robust web shop at the same time. So this isn't like, hey, give us your 1 hour business lecture so much as what do you think is important when you're diversifying your income at a comic book creator at this day and time?
Yeah. Yes, you're high. Yes, we'll give you a job, Alex. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's really good.
Oh, my God. All right, I'm going to cut out the stream from LinkedIn because we're good
CFO
now.
Applications from Alex Alvin dropping.
I fucking love it, bro.
I know. It's strong.
Man, it's so interesting, right? Because it really is when I was younger and I was starting to do this, it was out of necessity because you guys have been around comics for a really long time. And remember, like when I was first breaking in, cartoony art was on its way out, right? Like the days of Joe Madden and all that, like Brian Hitch and that, like those guys, those more realistic movie screenshot looking guys were like brilliant artists. Alex Maleev, Phillips, all these guys were the guys now, like it, which justifiably so, they're fucking brilliant. But I was like, I don't know where I fit in anymore. I don't know if I'm going to be able
you're
to.
You're like, uh-oh.
Yeah. So I was like, I better start figuring out how to make money. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier, like with the hip hop stuff, like I understood, like make a tape, put it in your backpack and go to places where people like hip hop and go sell it to them. Right. But this has always been my brain. It took me years to get older to be like, oh, I was always that. Like I'm of an age where, you know, we watched the first video, the movie rental places open up, right? Like pre-Blockbuster. Like I remember my dad coming home and be like, this thing is called a VCR and it plays movies. And we're like, what? And then one day he came home with movies. I was like, where'd you get these movies? He's like, we rented them from Small Town Video. it's literally called Small Town Video. I'm not shitting it. Yeah, and so a couple years later, when I got older, being a music guy, anytime birthday, Christmas, I always was asking for tapes. My paper out money, I bought tapes. I bought my Public Enemy. I was buying, you know, anything about. I got to a place where about sixth grade, I thought, hey, I have a lot of tapes. My friends always are asking me like, oh, can I borrow that? And I was like, so I wrote all my tapes down on a piece of paper, taped them to the side of my desk in elementary school, and I rented out my tapes.
That's I love taping it to your desk.
Yeah,
you
were bro.
Open for business.
Open for business, homie. I would bring my back then my tape cassette, my thing looked like a briefcase. Remember those? They looked like a little brown, like faux leather briefcase.
Little lock on it.
Yep. So I would bring that to school every day and I'd rent you for the week or whatever. It's like a buck, you know, or whatever. I'd rent you out my tapes or whatever. So I've kind of been a weird hustler from jump, homie.
That's
like,
so it's funny.
Yeah. So
you're breaking knees if they don't return on time. What's your late fee like?
They did fuck up. Nobody brought back my bullet boys. Like they brought me the tape back, but they didn't bring me back I was like, where's the fucking case, doc? Like, what are we doing here? Smooth up in ya. I need a case with the apple, the bullet going through the apple.
Oh my God. So, that's so funny.
So honestly, once when comics started, the conventions were honestly, that whole world was just starting to expand. When I first started, you had San Diego and you had Chicago. Those were the two big shows. There were, you had Heroes in Baltimore and some smaller show, Mid-Ohio Con. You had some smaller shows, regional ones that were much, much smaller, but you didn't have what we have today. Like, you know, so yeah, we started like, oh, what can I sell? What can I, and I just started making those rounds and I would get to know the people who ran all the Wizard World shows. And I was always telling people, like, I was like, the people you want to get to know, like everybody always wanted to get to know the people who ran it. And I was like, no. You want to get to know the people who like give out the badges, right? Because those, like, once you get to know them, they're like, Scotty, oh, come on, I got you. And they just, you don't have to wait in line for your badges, you know? Like, so I've always been somebody pretty interested in finding the hustle there. But honestly, once the internet became what it is and the conventions became what it is, I think if you do want to make it in this business, it is really important to put yourself out there as much as you can and build a community. I think everybody gets lost and thinks that the way to make it in this business is go get a job writing or drawing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. But I won't take credit for this theory. I think it was probably 2010-ish that somebody wrote an article called 1,000 True Fans. And it the whole concept of like, instead of if we go back to the music analogy, they were like, everybody's so focused on selling a million records or selling out Madison Square Garden. They think that means you've made it. But so it's like, if you don't do that, then you can't be that, you can't do that job. And this was like, if more artists, painters, musicians, writers focused on 1,000 true fans, meaning 1,000 people that would give you $100 a year. Like over the course of the calendar, you give you $100. That's $100,000 a year. That's a great fucking living as an artist, right?
That's literally the only way people in any creative industry are getting by right now. Like, correct. It is just literally moved. Everything has gone to that.
Right. And they would give great examples. They were like, if you're a musician, instead of thinking that you need to sign with a major label, you should throw backyard concerts. And invite 20 people, invite 50 people. Those 50 people will be so fucking diehard for you. And I know that you guys know this because you've had this podcast, your show and podcast for so long, right? But that's what you guys did.
And well, you guys, we're at 998, so we're just waiting for two more people to tip us over the edge. Yeah.
But that intimate, that active connection with fans, because the old way, that way of the 90s and early thousands, you know, the aughts was passive. Like people, like radio is passive fans. You guys have built an active community. People are diehard. Like they're your people, right? Like, and once I realized, like, let's focus on that. It doesn't matter who I work on at Marvel or DC, because my people are going to, like, the people, the community that we've built and that we exist within, they're going to support us no matter what we do. And that to me is the most important thing.
That's so good. So true.
I did want to take it all the way back to something you said at the beginning. You had mentioned initially falling in love with Mad Magazine, and tomorrow Mad About DC is coming out, and I believe you have a page in it. So what was that like? Was that a full circle moment for you?
Massive, dude. Like yesterday was a wild day. Like, because we got the comps for that in at the studio at Super Fresh Mass. We got the comps for that. And on the same day, Chris Pacello came to the studio. Like,
wow.
I was like, my child, like, people don't understand. Like, I had the Generation X number one cover, the foil poster, in my high school bedroom. Like, it was on my wall. Like,
I also had that. On my
right? Wall. That chamber. Yeah. I just was like,
unbelievable. Oh. I was like, how does that even work?
I know. I was like, what is this character? He's just got no chest. Zah. And so all in one day, I like my favorite thing, the thing that taught me how to draw, the thing that probably taught me how to write, because I've always wanted to do comedy. And then one of my favorite comic book artists of all time is at my studio on that same day. I was like, I don't know. Like, I could probably just be done. I could just probably pack it in. And then over the weekend, Bill Morrison, who I'm a huge, obviously a huge Simpsons guy as well. Grew up, that was another thing that helped teach me comedy and drawing, and Mad Magazine, right? So I meet Bill, I meet Bill Morrison, and I'm like, you understand that your whole career is on my body. And he was like, oh my God, he took pictures of my arms. And so
that's so cool.
I really feel like my childhood is actually coming to full realization now. Like, I've done is aim at everything that I loved doing when I was a kid, and I'm actually doing it now. So it's pretty awesome, man. The Mad Magazine thing was so fucking cool. I'm so glad that Chip spearheaded that, and they let me be involved. It was a real full circle moment for me.
That is all amazing. Scotty, you're doing amazing stuff. We're loving Lobo. Obviously, we've talked about a lot that you have going on, but anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
No, I think you guys covered it pretty well. I mean, thank you guys so much for reading Lobo and enjoying it. I'll be honest with you. I really was like, there was a moment before people were reading it where I was like, Jorge, do you think I'm fucking blowing it, dude? Like, you know, cause I have such reverence for the character, but I'm like, am I doing anything different with it? I don't know. Jorge also then would call me and be like, I don't know, man. Maybe I think I'm blowing it. And I'm like, well, first of all, you'll be the one saving it. Like, with cause I want to make sure that we don't get off here without me saying, I genuinely think the work that he's doing on this book is mind blowing.
Like, it's like retro, but also feels so now and so, like you're saying, adaptive to what's happening in the story. And honestly, you talk about Chris Bocciolo, like, it has that depth of like, oh, look, there's a little frog in the background over there.
Yeah.
And he's got shit all over the place. It's awesome.
Yeah. And going back to what we're talking about with the collaboration, I said at the beginning, I was like, let's go old school. I was like, one of my favorite things that Giffen would do, especially when Giffen would draw this stuff. I don't think people remember how badass Giffen was as an artist, not just a writer. Because, like, look, Infanticide was all him drawing. But all the bells, all the little, like, stuff that he would put in the signs and the – and I was like, listen, everything in this book, it has to be space something. Like, I want it to be the space bathroom. I want it to be space pool, space everything. So Jorge is like, he took that on. But he's the one who, like, he's adding fucking condoms floating in space and shit. And I'm like, he's a genius. I tell people all the time to try to recognize when you are amongst legends that are currently doing it. Cause I think sometimes we don't realize it until way later. And we're like, oh, I think Jorge is one of those guys. Like, people will look back and be like, oh shit, we were a part of like a legend working. And he's really one of those guys. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Wow. His stuff is absolutely great on Lobo, but your stuff is great as well.
Thank you.
We're loving it. As I said, Scotty, congratulations on everything. So great chatting with you. And hopefully we'll talk soon.
Well, I appreciate you guys not only supporting this book, but you guys have been so supportive of me for so many years. All the times that you've invited me on the show, and I really appreciate it. You guys just keep circling back and supporting all that I do. It means a lot to me.
For sure.
I love your work.
Yeah. Have a great night, Scotty. Thank you.
Yeah, you guys too. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. All right. There we go. Just to plug it again, Lobo 1 is out right now. Lobo number 2 is coming out on April 15th from DC. You can also check out all the I Hate Fairyland covers as well as the book itself from Image Comics. That's ongoing right now. And we also mentioned Mad About DC is coming out tomorrow, where you can check out Scotty's page.
Scotty page.
And we are going to turn the page to our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up and it's your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. Can be about absolutely anything. And we will get to it. Justin, what you drinking over there? Were you having the... main man highball or something else?
No, that was just a regular old cocktail, Negroni. Okay. But what I'm drinking now, shout out to Pete LePage. It's a little bit of daytime.
Ooh. It's always daytime somewhere. That's what I always say.
Yes, that's true, technically.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Do we have any questions? I think mostly there's a lot of compliments that are left over for Scotty. Everybody's very nice to him because he rocks. Oh, here we go. This is a question from Captain McGlue. Can Alex say Ash and Combine like he says it on the stack one more time? How do I say it?
I don't know exactly what Captain McGlue means, but if I would guess it's with absolute disdain.
Oh, the Ash and Combine?
Yes, exactly.
The Twilight very... Court?
Yeah. It's insulting to
Here's the thing. I just like full disclosure.
By the way, Alex, it was just Ashen Wednesday. We were all celebrating on the streets.
Okay. And then we're everyone who had a little Twilight Lent, I believe.
Or everyone who had a little the Twilight of Twilight. Everyone who had an ash on their head was celebrating the ash.
I actually think about this a lot because like I don't like these things, but I always try to make it clearer that we respect the craft that people have put into stuff, because it does later on, I'm like, man, I feel bad because we have creators listen to this show pretty regularly. And I don't want them to think we don't like them personally just because a book didn't necessarily, or a plot line didn't necessarily hit for us, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyway, I guess I was thinking about whoever the writer might be of the Ash and Combine the other day and kind of feeling bad about him because we like a lot of his or her stuff. I don't want to.
I believe Jed McKay was the Ash and Combine.
I know.
Oh, you're trying to not say it?
I was trying not to say it.
We all know.
Because we're like summoning him like a genie.
Yeah.
I like his stuff on Moon Knight right now is great. I love it.
I love Jed McKay. I've been a huge Jed McKay fan for so long. And I like the Ash and Combine, so.
Do you?
I do.
The Ash and Combine? Really?
Yeah.
What do you like about the Ash and Combine specifically?
I like the... I mean, we're in a phase of that's how the Avengers names are. Mm-hmm. It's very Hickman-esque, and we're doing that a little bit.
All right, if you could rank them real quick. Ash and Combine, Twilight Court, Blood Coven.
Oof, tough one. I gotta say Ash and Combine.
Ooh, number one. All right.
Number one, definitely. Blood Coven was started out really cool, did nothing.
Yes.
When they revealed the Blood Coven, I was like, okay, yeah. Varney. Okay, Varney, I'm here. Twilight Court, can't get behind. I like Night Court more than I like the Twilight Court.
Yes. That's fair. That's a good ranking of that. Stray Bullet wants to know, is our next guest Pete LePage? I believe he left after we said the thing about Space Wolverine.
He definitely is. I hope he's not actually mad, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
We all know that. That was a joke because everyone knows I'm the one who says Space Wolverine.
Yeah. Oh, there's actually a delay. There's a bunch more things coming in. Pete LePage 9325, which we haven't established is the real Pete LePage or not yet, says, what the fuck, keep getting kicked to the nuts. He is dealing with some family stuff. So there you go.
Yes.
Schreikler says, what is your biggest childhood nostalgia moment in Comic Book Club? Great question.
Oof. That's a great question.
Biggest childhood nostalgia. I'm sort of like rattling through my mental Rolodex of interviews right now.
We've done so many. My number one answer is it's sort of fucked up now, so I can't really say it anymore.
No, I know who you're talking about. Mine's also fucked up. Should we just say them?
Never meet your heroes, I guess. Well, mine, I've been made fun of for the hearts flying over my head when we did this interview, but we interviewed Neil Gaiman, and that was very cool. Obviously, I can't really
say the one that immediately came to mind for me was Joss Whedon. Problematic all over the place. Yeah. But the funny one about the Joss Whedon one to me was I was at that point, I was like, oh my God, I don't know if you remember this. Like, this is, I think, the most nervous I've ever been for an interview was a Skybox interview New York Comic Con that we're doing for Newsarama. And I was literally like sweating because I loved Buffy and Angel and Firefly and everything so much. And he was coming in for Dollhouse with
Dollhouse Reunion, or wasn't it, or something?
I don't remember what it was.
Or
it was
finale?
It was Dollhouse finale. And he was coming in with Tomo Pennicott, who was also on the one that everybody's like, sure, he's on Battlestar. Okay, that's fine. But I remember I was like sweating, over-prepared for hours to get ready for this probably 10-minute interview. And
just to continue to set the stage, we're also doing like 30 interviews over the course
yes,
of the day.
But so this you're is the only one. This was like mid-afternoon, and this is the one, like, every single interview, like, in the back of my head, I was like, Joss Whedon's coming. Joss Whedon. Yeah. I love it. Joss Whedon's coming. Really it was driving me insane. And he finally comes in, and he was, like, so crazy underwhelming as an interview. Yeah. Tom yes. O'Pettiquette, great. Like, lovely yeah, to chat so with good. Him. Very fun, very odd. Joss Whedon literally would have wanted to be anywhere else at that point. And I immediately, like, it was so funny. There was, like, this snap in my brain from stressing out all day. As soon as I saw that he was not engaged, I was like, well, that's it. I don't care anymore.
You cut him down. You cut him off.
Well, I didn't, wow. like, cut him loose.
You canceled. You pre-canceled him.
I pre-canceled him. Wow. No.
Great work.
I don't know. He's a terrible guy now, but there you go. Stray Bullet says, have you guys been playing any video games lately? Our video games thread on Discord, any Patreon member has access to it, is a fairly busy thread. That is very true. Justin, any video games lately?
I have finally started playing the game that I have been waiting for like so long. I played it. We traveled on the plane, and I was like, finally, I have a minute. Then my kids took the controller. I was like, I'm not having it. But it's now I can't even remember the name of it. It's like Ash and Combine, actually. with the little bug.
Yes, I haven't been playing anything recently, but I was going to take
Hollow Knight. It's Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight, yes.
The Hollow Knight sequel. I finally just started playing Silksong.
Oh, nice.
It is very fun. Sorry.
Excellent. No, I don't have a good answer. Stray had recommended Split Fiction, and my son is now obsessed with getting that, so we are probably going to get that and try playing it. M. Dubcat just wants to say Karami's art on McKay's Adventures was top tier, in my opinion, deserves a second look.
Agreed.
I think that's totally fair. Ikar says, what did you think of the Supergirl trailer? I know we touched on it a little before, but thoughts?
I'm hyped. I've been hyped from the jump. Like, there's a lot of people being like, this looks too much like all the superhero movies we've seen. And I would argue, I think it looks good. We liked those superhero movies. It's just the script started getting bad. If this script is good, and this script is the one that was hyped, the script was the hyped part, which is why they did it second, then I think we're in really good shape.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I mean, they're definitely hitting a lot of the big points for the comic by Tom King and Bilquis Evely. That's a great comic. So I'm excited about that. Yes, it's very like Guardians of the Galaxy, the way that they're selling it in the trailer, but they have to sell a movie. You know, so
yeah,
there's only so much you could necessarily tell about it from just watching the trailer. But like, Billy Alcock's good, Jason Momoa does look great as Lobo.
Yes.
Krem of the Yellow Hills looks pretty scary. So I'm excited. It feels like it's going to be a very different thing. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
This is from Crispy Cartoons with the news about the Sora AI Disney implosion. Do you think we're finally seeing the beginning of the AI bubble burst? For anybody who doesn't know this news, what happened is that Disney made a $1 billion deal with OpenAI to use Sora and have videos go on Disney Plus using the Disney characters. And then very abruptly, OpenAI was like, nope, we're actually shutting down Sora. And Disney was like, great, we're not giving you $1 billion. So such a pleasure not doing business with you.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this, Justin?
I wish this was the bubble bursting, but I actually think it's and it maybe is good for the creative side that is being threatened by AI. Because what it boils down to for my take, my observation is the AI business has moved so heavily toward corporate and government work that they just can't afford to have their compute resources wasted on doing a deal with Disney that is sort of meaningless for them when it comes to making money besides the $1 billion. So I think it's just a shifting of resources away from something that was a little bit of a side trip for them in the long run.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. I mean, to be 100% clear, I think AI is a net negative for the entire planet and humanity.
Agree completely.
100% bad. Yeah, I don't think you were not saying that. But I think to your point, what they've started to discover is for the most part, the tech sector has been like, oh, actually, we could find some use cases for this. And the creative sector is like, please stop stealing our stuff. And then being like, hey, you got to opt out of us stealing your stuff. It can't replace human creativity. That's never going to happen in a million years. On the other hand, I do often think about, like, if they had approached this whole thing differently, like a year or two ago, and been like, hey, we're going to try to like spruce up some tech stuff. Tech people would have been like, cool. And the rest of us would be like, okay, these phones are faster. Thank you. Versus being like, hey, do you want to use our AI product? And everybody being like, no, thank you. And then they'll be like, okay, we'll just put a larger bubble there. And then you'd be like, no, really, I don't want to use it. And they'd be like, okay, we actually got rid of our tech product and now it's an all AI tech product and you have to use it. And if you don't want to use it, you're going to get left behind. And also we've stolen all your data. Is like, why are you doing this? Why? There's so many better ways to come around this. This is not the way to run a business. So to answer your question, I hope we're seeing the AI bubble bursting. I do think it's going to burst in certain respects because they can't, it's empty at the bottom there. But it will probably explode and then they will figure out actual ways of using it that are hopefully not quite as destructive for the planet or taking up all of everybody's time.
Yes, and we can stop talking about it as much because that's the part that I really
I would love that. Sick of.
But I mean, honestly, like in the ways I've seen people use it, I'll tell two quick things. One, it's different work that I do. People are starting to like be like, "Here's our script," and it's AI written clearly. And the first few times you work with them, they'll reread the script and make changes and make it better. And then it'll be fine. But so often now they're like, here it is. I'm like, okay, well, the talent's here. We start in a half hour and this is gobbledygook. You didn't read this.
Right.
And so then they slip into instant panic mode. They're like, what are we doing? I was like, well, I can fix it now. If we do this earlier, then we don't have to do it this way.
Right.
And you pay a human to do it. And it's going to take people a while to learn that lesson, but eventually they're going to realize I don't want to panic every day of my life from now on. Right. And I think we'll go back to that. So I do feel like the pure laziness of it is going to win out over doing the work. So eventually it'll be like, let's pay someone to do this.
It's so much quicker. The amount of people, sorry to interrupt you, but like just one thing that's driving me crazy is it's not necessarily people on the creative side of business, but I definitely deal with people very frequently on the more business side of business who are like, yeah, I just used ChatGPT to iterate a couple of ideas of titles. And I'm like, well, first of all, that's the fun part. Like it is fun.
Exactly.
It is fun to brainstorm these ideas or titles or like prompts or whatever. Second of all, those are all bad and we could come up with some better ones much quicker than this. So like you have saved absolutely no time whatsoever. Anyway, you got another
point. The other thing I was going to say is I was talking to someone and they were saying there was this study done where they had two groups of people have to write an essay. One guy had to write it, one group. The other got to use ChatGPT to write the essay. Submitted the essays. They were sort of similar. You know, they were like about the same. They did the, they kept doing this experiment a couple times. It was sort of giving the same results. And then what they did after a while is they said, okay, now you're both going to submit essays, but you both have to write them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that had been using chat for however long, their essays were awful. Like they lost the skills immediately that they needed to do anything, any part of their job. And so like the atrophy on your brain when you give up these basic tasks sets in quickly. And I just feel like that's going to become a thing immediately for so many people.
100%. I'm going to mention two things, one that's not related to this podcast and one that's very related to this podcast to sort of back up what you're saying. The first one is like my kids' school, you probably got the same survey. The New York City school system is like, hey, we're wondering about like what we should do about AI and guidelines. And I took a look at their guidelines and they're like, well, you can use it. They're like, absolutely never for very specific computer administration tasks. And then the green light, they were like, but you could probably use it for like brainstorming and research and everything. And I was like, no, flip this. What are you talking about? Because that's why are you... Schools are about learning. If you take away the learning, you might as well take away the schools. That's insane. So I told them in no uncertain terms, and I think other parents are doing the same, like, just don't use this. What is wrong with you? Even though I hear from my kids all the time, who my kids hate AI, their teachers are like, oh, why don't you just use AI to do that? And I'm like, well, you're not teaching then. But the other thing that's more specific to this podcast that I was thinking about the other day is every week on our website, I put comic book previews. I hate doing it. It is a grueling slog to put them together. I have a template, so it makes it a little bit easier. But every day on Friday, I'm like, I fucking hate doing this. This is driving me fucking crazy. And then I push through it anyway. And I don't have to do it, but I had this intrusive thought a couple of weeks ago where I was like, I guess an AI could probably like not write them, but like generate the posts for me, and then I could just check them. And then I was like, what am I talking about? Because the reason I do these is because writing them out, I learn every single writer and artist that's on every Marvel book and DC book and Dark Horse book and IDW. I learn how to spell them. I learn the accents are on their names. I get the plots of the book, all of the things that we need to talk about the show and be informed when we're doing reviews. A lot of that I get from just doing these previews every week. And I don't necessarily get them from just reading the previews. It's from physically typing out the names of these people that I make a mistake. And then the next week I remember like, oh, I made a mistake. I don't remember what the mistake was. And then I do it again. And by the third time, like, I've got the name. So again, this is just like backing up exactly what you're saying. It drives me insane that like people don't understand that you're skipping the learning part of the process by using these tools. It's not making it easier on you. It's making it harder and worse in the long run. Anyway, we're very pro AI here on this
podcast. Yeah, that's our, we'll give you weekly AI updates if you want.
Omnia Solar says, what is your favorite series from the Absolute line? That's an easier question.
Yes. I'm curious if yours has shifted at all, Alex. And it's a tough one because I'm enjoying all of them truly. But I think it's Wonder Woman right now. It's the one I'm most excited to
read. I think Wonder Woman, too. I really like the whole line, but I think that has really stood out as the most gorgeous book with the most consistent storytelling and the most heart to it. Like, I like all of them, but it's just great. It's good. Southside Ronan says, what book are you looking forward to picking up the most tomorrow? That's a great tee up, but we're actually going to do that in a little bit in the show. So stay tuned for that. What else? Did I miss anything else? I know there was a lot of stuff that came in while we were ranting.
We were literally ranting.
Yeah. Oh, this is not true. Schreukler says, Alex said on the Discord that the Masters of the Universe trailer looks miles better than Supergirl, but what are Justin's thoughts? I actually said it made my brain hurt while I was watching it. Like, literally, I had a physical reaction to watching that trailer where my head started throbbing, and I was like, why are we doing this?
Because you think it's going to be, like, really good? Or...
No, Idris Elba is Man at Arms, and he looks like they gave him the stupid helmet and everything. It's... I'm blanking on the name of the show. There was a show, it was a British show. It's on HBO Max. It's not Love Struck, but it's like something like that. And there's a plot line. It's a woman who, normal woman, she dates a movie star. The movie star is in, he's a big movie star in London, and he's starring in this movie called Keys to Olympus. And there's the sequence where he's at the junket, and he just like starts spiraling and goes on this whole rant breaking down like about movies like this, where he's like, you hear a clip of them being like, we got to find the key to Olympus to open it up. And he's like, it's a mountain. Why would you need a key? Starstruck. Thank you. Why would you need a key to Olympus? And that has stuck with me since I watched that. And every time I see something like a Masters of the Universe here, where it's like deadly serious take or like MCU style take on a property from the 1980s, I'm like, there are other things. We could be doing other things with our time and our money than this. That's all.
This has the hallmarks of an absolute disaster of a film, but it may be so intense that it's like camp. It goes full camp. I don't know. Yeah. It could be. Could be that. It looks like... I don't know. And I haven't heard, not a lot of talk about like what it was like being on set filming. It's very, so who knows? It's a real black box of a situation.
If it's good, it's good. And I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum or anything like that. But this is also not to like go too far afield, but I was having a conversation about nostalgic properties the other day. And somebody was throwing out all of these different properties like, oh, you could reboot this property from the 80s. And that's a great way of like appealing to parents who are trying to bring in their kids to buy stuff. And I was like, you know, the 1980s was well over 40 years ago at this point. So if you want to aim at parents with nostalgic stuff, you got to go 2000s. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that everybody's missing is they're still nostalgic for stuff that came out of the 1980s, or they think the nostalgia is there. But they got to move their expectations up 20 years.
The window is so different than what most people think. It's crazy. But, I mean, this is what I always said when I was working for, like, networks like MTV back in the day. All those places, and it's true now in so many places, it's 60-year-old people deciding, greenlighting shows that are being showrun by 50-year-old people, pitched by 40-year-old people, starring 30-year-old people who look like they're 20-year-old people that they're trying to get teenagers to watch. Yes. And it was like, holy shit, what? But that's, I mean, I have the stats. Like, it's actually that.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that also explains one of my least favorite things in any teen show where the teens are always obsessed with John Hughes movies. And I'm like, show me. Show me the teens who are like, oh, my God, all I watch is 16 Candles. Because that's not them. That's the showrunners who are obsessed with them. Anyway. In any case, now that we've taken down AI and the entire teen movie complex. Yes.
Pete is mad that we didn't answer his question.
Oh, what was his question? I missed it.
His question was he's mad because he thinks I insulted him in front of Scotty. Pete, I did not mean to insult you. I was making a everyone here knows that I'm the one that calls Lobo Space Wolverine. It was not meant to indict you. Scotty was very, like, he agreed about Space Wolverine. There's nothing negative hanging on your
head. Yeah, in fact, Scotty was backed you up. So now we can't say it anymore.
Yeah, we say space fucking Wolverine, I believe. I'm sorry if you were insulted, but I did buy this beer special for you, so I hope you're drinking one as well.
Yes. We got a special guest here in the comments. Trish Forstner, the incredible artist of Feral and Stray Dogs, says hello. Hello right back at you. If anybody not picking up Feral, we talked to Tony about this the other week, but wild twist.
Great issue to pick up.
Oh, so good. Issue 21, Feral 21, pick that up, kick off of a new arc. We won't tell you what the arc is, but it's pretty sweet. And there we go. I think that is it for your audience questions. Whoop, 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 whoop. Now, normally we go to trivia. Pete is not here today, so we will not go to trivia. We'll catch up on it hopefully next week. Oh, we won't.
Yeah, we won't.
Because we are not doing a show next week. Or at least not doing a live show. We still have podcasts going up in the feed, but we are taking next week off. I know I usually announce this at the end, but since it came up, we'll be back on April 14th with Tiffany Babb. We'll be talking about the comic staple of the Comics Courier, but no show next week because we both of us are traveling, right?
Yes, I'm going to be in Cincinnati and then flying to Phoenix. So I'll be in Phoenix. So,
and I'm taking a college tour because I'm going back to college, just like Rodney Dangerfield.
Rodney Dangerfield, interesting.
Oh, I got no respect.
Great. Talk about speaking to the generation.
Speaking to the youth. Do you know what I realized? Wait, what? I should probably offer this up first. I exclusively remember the year 1993 more than any other, and it drives me insane, and I don't know why. What I mean by that is whenever I make a reference to something very obscure, I look it up, and it came out in 1993. So I don't know what happened then, but it's stuck in my head. Is there a year that's like that for you?
That's crazy. I don't know. I guess I would have to like check my refs.
Yeah. I'll give you a specific one. Like the other day, I saw something that said, we're back, and immediately my brain went, A Dinosaur's Story, which is a animated movie that flopped and came out the same weekend as Mrs. Doubtfire in 1993. Wow. Why do I remember that? Why is that poster in my brain? I never saw the movie. There's no reason to have that information.
I mean, I have just the brain poison where I'll just be doing something and I'll start the theme song to Fantastic Max, an animated show about a baby who was like James Bond, will jump into my head. And that's from, it's all like, or Denver the Last Dinosaur, or any number of just truly shows that have been erased from all of culture. But if I had to pick a year, I would think it'd be like 97, where and the music and movies of that time is what I think. I just have a picture of me like in the summer being like, I love everything.
those were the times. That's what we need to be nostalgic for. Now, since we're not doing trivia, we can talk about what we're looking forward to tomorrow. Justin.
Oh, yes.
What's coming out?
Well, we do have a lot of stuff coming out tomorrow. Obviously, Mad About DC number one is going to be a fun one. So that's one to look forward to. Sacrificers number 20 from Rick Remender. I believe the next issue is the last issue of this comic.
Is it?
I think it is.
Wow. It's coming out very quickly. I feel like the last one just came out. There's a new one tomorrow, and I think there's another one coming out in the next like week or two or something like that. It's pretty crazy.
In this series, like it has the classic like upsetting arc of all Rick Remender stuff, but it is really, really like it. It's dark. It's about like humanity, gods, how we become what we hate potentially over time, which has been really great. Looking forward to seeing how that's all coming to a close. I mean, maybe a little toss to Venom 256.
Who knows why?
Been really loving the crossover.
Yeah, good crossover. Good Death Spiral crossover. I am looking forward to Touched by a Demon number 3 is coming out from Dark Horse Comics. Really been enjoying that book. It is absolutely ridiculous if you haven't picked it up. We're also having Kristen Gudsnuck, the creator of the book, is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, so definitely get caught up in that. Also very curious about Captain Marvel Dark Past. That is by Paul Jenkins and Lucas Wernick, which is...
I saw that on the list. Paul Jenkins, was this a Jenkins renaissance coming out?
Yeah, that's why I'm interested. Like, I thought the Century number one that just came out was great. And
yeah, same.
I was, when they announced this, I was like, really? He's doing a Captain Marvel series? Well, I don't know why this is happening, but I like what he did on the Century. Love Lucas Wernick's art. So I'm very curious to check that out. And there's one other I wanted to give a shout out to. Oh, Royals number one from Image Comics. Mm. This is by Derek Kirk Kim, who did The Last Mermaid. He's not doing art on this book, but I love The Last Mermaid. So I'm really curious to see how he followed that up. And all of those books and many more books are going to be in our Stack podcast that debuts Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
Yeah.
Thank you once again to Scotty Young for coming on and talking about Lobo. Lobo number one is out now. Lobo number two is out April 15th. You can check out the I Hate Fairyland cover takeover on Image Comics, as well as Mad About DC, which he has a contribution in tomorrow. As mentioned, we don't have a show next week. No show on April 7th, but we will be back live again April 14th with Tiffany Babb coming back to the show to talk about the comic staple. She did the Comics Courier, which was a quarterly comics criticism zine, and now she's doing a monthly one called the Comic Staple, so that's pretty cool. Also, speaking of comic book news, Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, on a little bit of a hiatus now because of traveling and stuff, but we'll be back in a week or two. Podvincible, our Invincible podcast, is back and recapping episodes weekly. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, recapping episodes of Daredevil. Hopefully we should have the ones for this week up soon. As soon as we finish taping these podcasts and then the episodes and then tape the next podcast. That's how it works. That's time, people. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Thanks for being in our 1,000 True Fans group, gang.
You are our only fans.